Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffen. It's Wendy Snyder. A slightly abbreviated version of our show today because of White Sox baseball. I just wanted to tell you, I don't know if you were doing what I was doing on the way in. I was listening to Steve Cochran's show.
I was doing the same thing.
How about that? How about that? Coincidence. All right. So Steve had this kind of running thread throughout the show of people's irrational fears. And I've talked about mine several times on the air.
Needles.
I'm afraid of needles. I'm very afraid of needles. But as I'm listening to various fears that people have,
especially Mary Sandberg's, you realized you weren't so irrational.
Explain to everybody Mary Sandberg's, because she's afraid of death, but in a weird way.
Right, because everyone's kind of afraid of death.
Yeah.
But she feels like if she thinks about it, it won't happen because God won't. God only wishes it upon people that would be surprised by it or something.
Right.
So since she's prepared, she has dodged a bullet for herself and for her parents, whom she loves so much.
Right. I'm not positive that'll work. I mean, it's good to believe that. I hope she's right. But that's an interesting stance on her fear of death. But, you know, a lot of people were afraid of things that you've heard before, like heights or snakes and stuff. And then some were a little bit stranger. But then I kept thinking about one that I used to be afraid of all the time, but because my lifestyle has changed a little bit, I'm not afraid of it anymore. And I know this is ridiculous, but you know when you would go into like one of those Speedy Lube places, those 15-minute oil change places?
Jiffy Lube. Speedy Lube.
Yeah, we had Speedy Lube by us, but it's like it's the same.
All right.
It's a really quick... You know, they tell you to line up, and then they show you your air filter, and they go, hey,
I don't know where you were going, but...
$180 when technically they're $9.99, but...
It's the funniest thing in the world. You go in for an oil change, and they're going to give you the oil change, but they always show... There's some part of the car they show you, and they'll go, hey, you don't have to get this fixed, but are you a father? Yeah, I got some kids. do you love your kids? Yeah, I love my kids. I wouldn't drive a car with an air filter like this, but that's up to you. Maybe you don't love your kids as much as some people do. No, I do. All right.
I always thought they had a dirty one that they just brought out to everybody.
I think they do.
I'm almost positive they do.
Anyway, I always had a fear whenever I was in Jiffy Lube, Speedy Lube, Quick Lube, whatever, that you drive up over this hole so that they can work on you from a lower level.
Yeah.
But I was scared out of my mind that I would misjudge it somehow and drive down into the hole. I never came close.
How are you in car washes? Because that freaks me out to get on the track.
Car washes I'm okay with, but I always remember this Doris Day movie where for some reason she couldn't get... Actually, that's every Doris Day movie.
But yeah.
She couldn't get the top down on her convertible, so the soap suds got inside.
Great scene. YouTube it, people.
Oh, it's so much fun. But... I knew that was ridiculous because honestly, you'd have to go out of your way to try to drive down into that hole, and I wasn't doing that. But it was always a very tense 35 or 40 seconds as you get the hand going, come on, a little more.
And you don't believe him. You're like, I should stop.
I've gone far enough, sir.
I understand that fear. I really do.
It's ridiculous, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's foreign
to us. Has anyone ever driven down into that hole?
I bet someone has. Mr. Magoo.
But if you just play the law of averages, you go, okay, they probably get 100,000 cars through here a year, and one came through. It's not going to happen often. But I'm telling you, you should have seen my face sometimes. I'd be going so slow.
I get like that driving over really long bridges. I really kind of freak out a little bit. There's a giant bridge going over, I don't even know what river it is, I'm embarrassed to say, in Peoria.
Yeah.
Illinois River? What would it be?
I believe it's the Illinois.
I think it is. There's this going into Chillicothe from Lakin. Mm-hmm. There's this giant bridge, and every time we go over it, I'm like, hurry up, Jim, please, hurry up. It freaks me out.
What's your fear there, though? I know it's of the bridge, but
we're going to go off the side somehow. Like get a blowout, even though we're not really going that quickly.
I would hope he slows down a little bit, does he, or does he speed up?
Well, he slows down just to bug me. Right. I'm like, come on, please. And then the most irrational fear of all time, and everyone in my family makes fun of me, and it's all because of my brother Chris. We had a bunch of kids in the neighborhood, and across the street from our house, there were four or five houses that all their backyards connected, and it was kind of wooded back there.
Yeah.
So we used to play flashlight tag all the time.
Yeah.
I was one of the few girls, because I was a tomboy, and there weren't that many young girls my age to play with. So my brother always wanted to get rid of me. I was always there playing with he and his friends. Yeah. We'd play softball in the street, and it's like, oh, is that Chris's little sister? Yeah, hey, come on, let's play. And so he made up this thing and said, Wendy, I wouldn't go back there. I said, why? He goes, the moose is there.
The moose?
And I'm like, who's afraid of a moose? And in my head, my thought bubble, it's Bullwinkle. He's not going to hurt anyone.
No, he's very kind.
But then all the boys kind of gathered around and said, oh my God, that moose, if you, it tears people apart. So I freaked out, ran home crying, and I don't know what it was. My kids laugh at me and say, a moose is not scary. Did you think it was an animal moose? Was he on four legs? I said, I wasn't really thinking. I just.
It's the way it was presented.
The way
to you.
It was presented, the moose would scare me so much. So to this day, my kids still, you know,
when they,
want to scare me, it's like, Mom, the moose. And it's like, I'm not afraid of him anymore.
Or not as much as you used to be anyway.
Right. But I Bullwinkle at first, who's afraid of Bullwinkle? No one. But then you, meese are kind of scary. They're so giant and bony legged.
Yeah.
And then I thought, is it standing on 2 feet and even bigger? I don't know, but the moose scared me. Needless to say, my brother got rid of me.
We used to have, when I was a kid, I had this puppet of Herman Munster. So you could put your hand in, let you know how a puppet works. is everybody familiar with the concept of puppetry? Okay.
Although so, I didn't know if it was a standalone. This was a
it
literal,
was about 10 or
not
11
a marionette.
No, it was a puppet. And one of my cousins was so afraid of it, and we would go out of our way to put it in places where he wasn't expecting it. Like if he was staying over with us, we would tuck it into the bed so that when he pulled his sheets down, the Herman Munster puppet would be laying there.
And then he'd wet the sheets.
Yeah.
Like the devil doll, kind
of. Yeah, like the devil doll. Yeah.
Well, that would be scary, although
it was,
it's a
but
puppet.
It, right. I mean, even a scary Frankenstein in a 10-inch form
right.
isn't that scary.
See,
when
the
you're
moose
a kid,
was in my mind, and it could have been anything.
Oh, yeah.
So that,
the
I didn't.
The sky's the limit.
Yeah.
There.
The moose.
All right, let's do this.
If you ever want to get rid of me,
just call for the moose.
Yes,
that's how it works.
The moose is here.
We'll take a quick break, and then more show. Want to jump in? You can at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You know what that means.
I know what that means.
312-981-7200. Baseball tickets. Who wants a family four-pack? We could just go with caller number four.
Let's do that.
Lucky four. You get a family pack of four tickets to the Chicago White Sox versus the Pittsburgh Pirates. Game rated
Oh, because Pirates say that.
Yeah.
Right.
Wednesday, May 9th at 1:10. I love it. It is baseball weather. It's warm out there. A 1:10 game. And keep listening for that sounder, the one you just heard. It's your cue to call in to win seats to the Sox. We're doing it all regular season long, and we need the fourth caller, 312-981-7200. Look at this.
That's how fast it is.
Vicky, you are caller number four.
Wait, I hope that wasn't a moose sound effect, Vicky, because Wendy gets very afraid of moose.
Meese.
Meese, mice, moose.
Where are you from, Vicky?
I'm from Hampshire.
That's going to be a long drive in, isn't it?
Not New Hampshire,
it
Wendy.
Will,
oh,
Hampshire. But it's worth it.
Yes, a family four-pack. It's Wednesday's game at 1:10. If I'm not mistaken, isn't Wednesday Dollar Hot Dog Day? I think it is.
It could be, yeah.
I think it is. Well, good. You get four tickets. Do you have four favorite family members that you're going to bring with? Actually, three, because you'll get one of the tickets.
Exactly. Yeah, I sure do. This
awesome.
Will be great. Thank you.
Certainly.
Have a good time, Vicky. Congrats.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Thank you so much.
All right, hang on.
More chances as the season progresses. I just did this promo for Micah and Joe on the Channel 9 News. Steve Bertrand, you went to college with Joe Donlan. You guys went to Marquette University in Milwaukee together.
Yes, we did.
Wendy just shared a fun fact about Joe Donlan that I didn't know.
Uh-oh.
He was breakdancing on the morning news.
He will do anything.
It looks like he will.
Yeah.
He wasn't too bad.
I heard, now this is an inside story just for us, that's how he got the job, that they wanted a news guy who also could breakdance, and Joe is an expert breakdancer, and that's what got him the job. So I love Mark Sapelsa, but he was a horrible breakdancer.
Yeah, Joe was a hockey player in college, so he would break some things there.
Yeah.
All right, I got to tell you, he didn't even have that little folded piece of cardboard that everybody, all
he
the breakdancers used to put down.
He's too good.
He just did it.
Remember Joel Daly every once in a while would yodel, and we were impressed by that?
The Sundowners.
Yeah, he was with the Sundowners.
Joel Daly and the Sundowners,
that
right?
That was always fun to see a news guy yodeling. I think if Joe, every night during the news, after one story,
There's his credibility.
He just starts breakdancing.
We'll find out, Bill, because if he cares, he'll
right.
do it.
Right. And he does care.
If he doesn't care, he won't do it.
No, I know. I think he'll do it. I'm pretty sure he'll do it.
I got to be honest with you. I was a little worried because it's like Mark Sapelsa is here. He's local. He was our guy. Mm-hmm. And I was worried, you know, oh, boy, they should have someone from here. We met him. Steve brought him in to show him off because I've noticed Bertrand's been totally riding on his coattails since
Absolutely.
He
was.
Have you, Steve? Yeah.
Oh, sure. It's like the way Wendy does with you, Bill.
Oh. Oh.
I've been doing that a long time. So he is great. When Steve brought him in, he's just so genuine, mm-hmm. really, truly belongs here in Chicago.
Yeah, he does a nice job.
And he's a breakdancer.
That's the most important thing. Sometimes I'll watch the other newscasts and I'll go, this is good, but there's no breakdancing at all. So I think Joe's going to change the playing field a little bit. Good for him. Here's an interesting contrast, Wendy. We don't have a whole lot of time to discuss this, but Kathy Griffin and Seth Rogen are both coming out talking about their friendships. Here's what I mean.
With each other?
Not with each other.
Okay.
Kathy Griffin was very, very close to Anderson Cooper for many years, and they would always do this show on New Year's Eve that I thought was the best thing to watch on New Year's Eve for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, where they would be in Times Square, and it would be bitterly cold, and they would just be talking about what's going on there. It was the countdown to New Year's. And on a night where good television is hard to find, it really is.
Because no one's watching it. They're out having fun. You're the only one home watching it.
It's right. It's just me, more times than not. But
and Janet Davies' husband, because he has nothing to do.
He comes over. Janet Davies' husband comes over, and we say, why don't any of the anchors breakdance? Every year, we get into that same discussion. But Kathy Griffin was always fun to watch with Anderson Cooper. And then Kathy Griffin had the incident.
The head.
With the head of Donald Trump, where she just got blackballed from all of show business and nobody would talk to her. And she tells the story about how Anderson Cooper wouldn't even just straight up talk to her, wouldn't call her, wouldn't stop by. But on Twitter, he condemned her. And she said, it's just awful. We were such close friends and that friendship is gone and she feels horrible about it. And Anderson Cooper doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
See, that's really hard for me to understand because if you're truly a friend with someone, you say, boy, did you screw up.
Right.
And you can even go on record and say
right.
that. But that's still your friend.
That's the hard part to swallow.
I'm loyal to a fault.
I know. Well, I already have things planned when you do something horrible.
Oh,
I already have a statement planned.
You will bail in a second. Friends.
I will pre-bail. On nights that I know you're going somewhere, I go, oh, this is the end. The end for Wendy. Now, here's the contrast to that. Seth Rogen has been very close friends with James Franco for about 20 years. James Franco is one of the people who has been kind of accused of various inappropriate things with women. So they asked Seth Rogen if he would still work with James Franco after all this. And he said, yeah. He'll still work with him. He goes, he's been
That's
a friend for a long time.
High. Seth Rogen,
is that what it is?
He is behind The Preacher. I don't know what exactly he does. I think he's one of the executive producers.
Producer. Yeah.
It's based on a comic book. It's awesome. The Preacher, it's great. He called in to Chris Hardwick's show, Talking Dead, mm-hmm. after... Right? Is it Talking? Yeah, The Talking Dead. And he just called in and Chris said, oh, we have a celebrity guest. How's it going, Seth? Didn't say anything other than, yeah, I'm high right now. And I just wanted to remind people to watch The Preacher. It starts up again on June 29th. And I love
That's
him.
That's very Seth Rogen.
But I'm like, come on. You've got more to offer than that.
I know.
You can follow him on Instagram, and he's constantly smoking a big fat dube and blowing smoke into the camera. So that he doesn't even remember what James Franco was accused of.
He might not remember. But isn't it interesting to look at the contrast between those two relationships?
Although
where
one
in one,
is
it
Ander-
would just end. Just that's the end of it. We
Anderson
can't be friends.
Cooper seems a little tighter than.
Yes and no.
Yes.
He's certainly tighter than Seth Rogen and or James Franco. But still, Anderson Cooper, for being a responsible news journalist, has a very fun side to him.
He does.
You know?
He likes to frolic.
He's a frolicker. But I'm a little shocked that he wouldn't give Kathy Griffin at this point, as she's trying to make a career rebound.
She messed up. She really messed up. Again, we talk about this with this, I don't know the name of the White House correspondence dinner person. What's her name? Michelle Wolf?
Oh, from the other night? Yeah, Michelle Wolf, yeah.
Again, to me, if it's over-the-top LOL funny...
Yeah, it's more forgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So Kathy Griffin kind of screwed up with that.
But she is making a resurgence. She has been showing up on a lot of shows the last couple of weeks. So all of a sudden, she was one of those people where you go, are we ever going to see her again? And she is starting to resurge. So if you're a fan of hers, that's very good news.
All right.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. And then a new museum is coming to Joliet, the Rock and Roll Museum. We'll tell you about that after the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
This is your White Sox Minute. I'm Jason Benetti.
Thank you, Steve. Bill has come a long way on the upright bass. I like what you're doing there.
Thank you for saying, for recognizing it, first of all.
Will you be performing at the new Illinois Rock and Roll Museum on Route 66?
In negotiations, Wendy. Ron Romero is here. Skip Kouperis is here on the board of directors for this new museum, the Joliet Rock and Roll Museum. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi. Nice to
see
you.
Nice to see both of you.
Nice to see both of you again. And this is kind of unrelated, and I hate to take time away from you, Ron, but... Ron, you and Wendy know that Bill and I are major, major movie stars.
Big
right?
movie
yes,
stars.
Absolutely.
Huge okay. movie stars.
We're honored to be
normally,
here with you.
I'm not competitive with Bill.
Yeah.
But I just got two royalty checks from Major League 1 and 2, totaling $7.99,
whoa,
my friend.
Holy smokes. So congratulations.
Suck it, Bill.
You win.
That's more than you, right?
I'm up.
Aren't yours like 89
me.
Cents?
Yeah, I guess
who's buying lunch
today?
I'm
going to Potbelly. I am going to Potbelly.
Live it up.
Yeah,
you deserve it.
That's right. So now enough about me. Let's talk about
this new museum.
Yes.
All right. I'm not going to steal this from Joan Jett, but maybe. I love rock and roll, okay? I cannot wait to see this. This is in Joliet. I can't make it to Cleveland. How did this happen?
You know what? It just came about. My wife and I had gone to, we were talking about Cleveland. We'd gone there. We'd gone to Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, had Rick's Picks in Rockford. And then we were down in Nashville, and they've got all sorts of museums down there. And
the Country Music Hall of Fame is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, when we were up at Rick's Picks in Rockford, when we were there, there was a busload of people that came from Japan. And I thought,
just
this
to
is
see the
just
museum.
Cheap Trick. And Cheap
from Budokan.
Yeah. I mean, they're an awesome band, but we have a lot of other music here in Illinois that just it rocks. I thought maybe we can bring people from all over the world to come see this.
Is Cleveland aware of your museum, and do you have their blessing?
Cleveland has no clue.
They don't. I'm not saying anything.
No, don't say a word.
Don't say.
That's just going to stay between us and your audience.
That's our secret.
Yeah.
So this is just Illinois artists?
It's only Illinois artists.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's better.
So,
I love it.
And despite the name rock and roll, we're starting like 40s with blues and jazz and stuff like that, and then moving to very contemporary times. So it's going to be a little bit of music from, you know, a lot of music from
like
Illinois.
The early Chess.
Yeah.
Style, yeah. Blues, you know, and the evolution, you know.
Yeah.
So the only prerequisite is that it has to be based somehow.
There has
somehow
to be some kind of a tie to Illinois. So, you know, we're some of the blues artists, of course, were Delta blues artists that were kind of transplanted in Chicago. And they came to play in Maxwell Street and recorded at Chess Records and such. Great history there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, naturally they're not born here, but Chicago really changed blues, and blues really changed rock. And
yeah.
So you'll see that when you come to the museum.
A couple things. Thing number one, it's one thing to have an idea like this, but to implement it is a whole other thing.
Oh, my.
So when you thought of this, what was the next step to make it a reality?
Well, it's really all. Ron is doing the yeoman's work in this whole thing. And frankly, I don't even know what yeoman means, but I know...
Do you know how to spell it?
Right now.
No, I don't know how to spell it.
I-E-O.
Okay.
I got to Google
But he's doing... I'm just, you know, what Ron says, can you do this for me? Okay. It's really Ron, and I'm just there to do what I'm doing today. It's just to be silly.
Yeah.
To bring a little levity to the, good. You know, so that... Because it's... I can't
he's
believe...
He's on the board with us now because he's made that $7 residual check from...
It's so impressive.
And we need the money.
I turned
so.
It right over.
Good. Just endorse the check.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So did you have a site picked out immediately? Did you have to go to investors and sell them?
We kind of did, but there was something in there, and we just kind of stepped back and we just looked around Joliet. We want to be in Joliet because one is right on Route 66. So we get to co-brand Illinois Rock with Route 66.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a location that we're working on right now. We can't actually say the location yet because we haven't finished all the paperwork on it. But we're doing with the contractors and meeting people to, for the renovation.
Yeah.
Roughly about 10,000 square feet. We're really excited about the location. It's going to be downtown Joliet, and there's a lot of cool things happening downtown Joliet right now.
What's your target date for an opening?
You know, we're hoping that we could still get open sometime this year, but really we're looking at
tough.
It'll be really full force probably the spring of next year, but we'll probably get a lot done this year.
True or false, the Friends of the Park does not want your museum to open.
The Friends of the
Friends
Park?
Friends of the Park?
Yeah. They didn't want the George Lucas Museum.
Oh.
So.
Yeah. Oh, right.
They just don't
want that went right over their head. Did you see that fly?
Sorry.
But when you said that, now I remember. Yes, of course.
Skip is so busy looking his residual check. He couldn't even focus.
But so you're coming on now because you're creating, like, people can be members of this, and you're funding it, basically.
So, yeah, we're doing some preliminary work.
It's a non-for-profit. We got that status.
That took
a while, just getting that.
That was about 6 months to get the 501c3 nonprofit status thing.
Why did it take that long to do that?
Well, you can get things that happen a little bit quicker, but we're hoping that we're going to do better with this organization. So the more money that you intend on making.
Yeah.
And we're planning on making lots of money.
Crazy money.
Yeah.
But so it took a little while to get that. But we did get that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at.
Now, some of the people featured, of course, we have Chicago, the band Chicago.
Certainly.
You're going to feature the Buckinghams, I would imagine, Crying Shames,
Absolutely.
Ides of March.
You got it.
My old band, the New Colony Six.
Yep.
I was in there 72.
You were?
Yeah, 72 until 75.
Did you know that about Skip?
I did not know.
I took over for Ronnie Rice when he left in 72. In fact, I had already sung and written a single for them before I even got in the band. I can't remember the name of it, but so Someone Sometime. I wrote it with Billy Herman.
Oh, wow.
You
wrote that?
Yes.
I didn't know you wrote that.
Yes, I wrote it with Billy Herman. You don't know that song. You're acting like
I do know that song.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we have to include him in the museum.
Yeah.
Right. Skip will get away.
I love Ray Graffia.
Oh,
yeah, he's
great
a great guy.
Yes.
I have an 18-year-old son who befriended him and loves that kind of music, so we will definitely be out to check this out. Some of the blues people, name some names.
Oh, you know, just recently I talked to a gentleman, Joe Morganfield.
McKinley Morganfield was.
There you go. Not everybody knows
Muddy Waters.
Muddy Waters.
So this is his son?
This is his son. Lives in Bolingbrook. So we've talked to him. We've talked to REO came in and did an interview with us.
How's Kevin Cronin doing?
He's doing pretty good. He's doing real good. Those are another bunch of guys that are really nice to work with. There's a lot of bands I love doing this because I've been a musician for many, many years. And for me to get to meet these guys and work with these guys and talk to them, I've actually stood on stage with, you know, I played for a short time with Jimmy Sons from Shadows.
Love
of
him.
Also with Dennis Stefano, I did a gig with him in Elk Grove one time. So there's and those guys, just to be near them, it's, you know,
yeah,
it's great. So I thought maybe if we did something to honor these musicians who did so well, and once I started doing the research, I thought I knew a lot about it. About Illinois music, and then I started realizing as I did the research, did you know that, you know, one of the Everly brothers was born in this area? I'm like, no, I didn't know that.
Yep, Phil.
Yeah.
Born
so
in Chicago.
So there's a lot
really?
Of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
Phil Everly, born in Chicago.
There's a lot. The bass player from Van Halen, Chicago, you know,
really?
Area. Yeah.
Mark Anthony?
Yeah. Michael Anthony. Yeah.
Michael.
Jim Peterick will be involved in some way, shape, or form, right? You'll do
something
with Jim.
You know what? I've reached out to his camp a couple times. I've talked to Scott May, who's his keyboard player, of course.
Yeah.
And I think we're still trying to get something together with Jim. So, Jim, if you're listening...
He was just in the other day.
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
But all his Cornerstones of Rock featured all these people, like the Crying Shames,
sure.
Jimmy Sons.
Yeah.
And Rick Derringer, which killed me.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know he sang lead on Hang On Sloopy because he was in the McCoys. Did you know that?
Yes.
The rock and roll Hoochie Coo guy gave us Hang On Sloopy.
Oh, I absolutely. Yeah. In fact, that was the Strange Loves that did, I think it was I Want Candy. We're actually a New York. Yeah. We're a New York duo. It was a studio group.
Mm-hmm.
They recorded Hang On Sloopy, and they weren't crazy about the vocals. They heard the McCoys.
Yeah.
So they, really, it's a pre-recorded track, and then McCoy's came and re-sang it, and that's the hit song, Hang
excellent.
On Sloopy.
Excellent.
I think I found someone I could go out to lunch with and talk old rock and roll things.
Oh, hey, there's only $7 to go around here, so I don't know if we could take anybody with us today.
And oh, Wendy, man. Ron and I want to break Dutch. Some news. This is this is breaking news. Ron has been talking to me about doing my one-man show where I portray Etta James, and we're looking to do that sometime early next year.
So. Well, do you think Etta James? Who else can you get to
it's
portray?
Me.
No.
It's well,
it's
me.
Vince Bill left.
Bill.
No Thank question.
You. Thank you for saying
And we are going to have a performing space, a stage and a performing yeah. area in part of it as well. So there's going to be live events. And Joliet is right now has just demolished the bank across the street, so there's going to be a big grass park and permanent stage right across the stage.
They're
right
doing a beautiful from, green space there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're putting up a new courthouse. There's so much renovation going on there, new businesses, new microbrews. You know, that was an area that was thriving at one time.
Yeah, right.
It took a nosedive for a while, but yeah. right now it's
Resurging.
Really, they're breathing new life into
Good.
It. It's beautiful.
It's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Where do we go to find out more information if maybe we want to donate?
So, yes, please donate. It's the roadtorock.org. Sorry, that's roadtorock.org. There you'll find information about what we're doing. You'll also see a place where you can donate. And then, of course, the charter membership, which you mentioned before. You get some benefits, like you'll get some discounts and some swag, like T-shirts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing special events, so you either get in free or you get discounts on some of the events that we're doing. And then if it's an annual membership, you join now. It'll renew 1 year after the museum opens, so you'll have a little extra time with that for now. And then there's also lifetime memberships, and we are getting quite a few lifetime memberships, and we appreciate the support because all of that money goes towards making this come to fruition. So it's
very accommodating. Very much so. Ron Romero and Skip Gripparis are here from the Joliet Rock and Roll Museum. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. The new museum is called the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum. Ron Romero and Skip Gripparis are both here to talk about it.
On
it's not
Route
open
66.
Yet. On Route 66.
Who did the original Route 66?
It was Nat King Cole
yes.
that did it originally.
Written
now,
by Bobby Troup.
And who was Bobby Troup? Bobby
from Troop. Emergency.
Bingo.
What?
Bing, 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 bing.
Married to Julie
he
London.
He was Dr. Yes. Early on Emergency. And that was Bobby Troup who wrote that song.
All my worlds just came together right there. Your goofy trivia, rock and roll trivia.
How high did Bill Left just jump with that answer?
He did. It was
pretty
high.
I was waiting for Alex Trebek to call my name.
He was jumping out of his chair.
I thought I won something.
All right. These $7. Are going to be... I'm going to take that $7 and I'm going to place a bet with you.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Okay.
But you have to be honest with me. There is someone in the rock and roll world that I'll bet you didn't know was from Chicago.
Oh, I know.
Who?
The Beatles.
No.
They're from El Pro Village.
Man, you're so close. You are so close.
People don't
know that
about
the Beatles,
when you leave.
From El Pro Village.
Well, George Harrison's sister lives
here.
She
lives nearby. Yeah. So it's kind of the Beatles. Kind of.
She's a woman, a rock and roll woman, who had a friend who was a white rabbit.
Grace Slick.
Did you know she was
absolutely.
From Highland Park?
Yes.
I owe you $7.
Pay up, Wendy.
Because I ran into her. We were in Hawaii, and she has just given up on everything in the world of rock and just has a studio and just does artwork.
Yeah.
And you could just walk in there and talk to Grace Slick. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
So she has to come do some artwork maybe for the walls in there.
Please, if she's listening. Do some artwork for us. I'm sure she's listening, right?
What's been this is a big process to have a dream to open a museum and then to have it come to fruition.
It's crazy.
What's been the biggest surprise for you, either positively or negatively, since you guys first thought of this?
Well, I thought we were going to say we were going to open up a museum and people were going to bring us money and they were going to bring us guitars and things like that. And it wasn't going to be political. It wasn't going to be anything involved like that. And I'm learning some lessons.
Why is it political? What's
yeah,
become
well,
political?
No, it's just, you have to deal with a lot of things locally and, we're looking for grants with the state and the government and private donors. And that just tends to get kind of,
there are a number of organizations trying to get money from the same pot. And so there's a little competitiveness.
Oh.
And so on.
In Illinois.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Well, we have so much money if you go around.
Right, there's plenty of money, a surplus. Yeah.
I hope you're not...
They've got $7 too.
...running into problems with people donating stuff, because I just feel like people have to remember from whence they came. And if they're from Illinois, right, they should
people
participate.
People are hesitant when you don't have the building and everything put in place.
I guess.
But now that we're getting closer, we're getting calls from everybody that's like, oh, hey, we've got these guitars from, you know, all sorts of different things that are coming through now. That's
You'd
awesome.
Almost think that if you're one of these people that you're going after, they would realize it's to better benefit for people to come in and see it than just upstairs in a room somewhere.
Well, you know? We want to keep the music alive. Our idea is to preserve the music. So, you know, a lot of the younger generation that hasn't heard the great music of Nat King Cole or Louis Armstrong, who was here in Chicago for a while, or, you know, the Buckinghams, who are still touring, and bands like that. We want to preserve that, and we want people to come out and listen to that and learn about the history and get them excited about it.
We also want to help with the music education and so on.
Yeah, the flip side to this is that we're not only doing preserving this music and honoring the music, but the flip side to that is we want to go back and help out some of the schools and maybe some of the students. You know, in some cases, disadvantaged students that don't have that opportunity.
Music program at all.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They don't have that, or they don't have the means to get that instrument that they want to do. Great story is, if you do the history on Louis Armstrong, he had some troubled times when he was a kid, but there was somebody that looked out over him and taught him how to play trumpet. And he became the
first man on the moon.
He did.
Oh, my God.
Man, is he good. Give him $7.
One small step for jazz.
Right. One large step for jazz kind.
Yes.
Words that'll never be forgotten, Skip.
Exactly.
All right, in all seriousness, Bill, when this gets started, again, this is the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum on Route 66. It's going to be in Joliet, and a ballpark figure of when you're thinking this may come to fruition.
We're still hoping that we're going to get something done by this year, the end of this year. And we'll do an opening, but really up and running the following year.
Since we have you in at the ground level, I would like to volunteer to MC some of the shows you have out
there. Oh, wow.
I'd
love to have you. Are you
kidding me? That's a $20 value that went
into
the lineup for free.
Because how fun would that be if you're having some of these musicians come in and play in concerts?
That's
wonderful.
I would
love to volunteer to help in any way I can.
We're working on some events to do some fundraising, and we're trying to get some of the, you know, bands to come out and play. So we'd
like
love to have
you. Do any concerts?
I'll vacuum when it's done.
What about your Etta James one-man show?
Well, that's already done. That's a done deal, Wendy.
James one-man
show. Oh, yeah, he's going to do that. There's no question.
Yeah.
At a gym. That's what you call it.
It's going to be fun.
Rob is on the line and says he's an old friend of Ron's and wants to say hi. Fingers crossed that this is on the up and up. Okay. Hi, Rob.
What I just want to ask Ron is, you know, he says he's going to sell T-shirts. Is he going to have any in men's sizes?
Yes, of course. I'm a big guy. You know I'm going to have big shirts.
Well, I'm always bigger than you. Remember that.
You know who this is?
Oh, my goodness. It took me a second. He's a big dog, aren't you?
Yes, indeed.
This is my good friend Robert Lutterly, also from Coal City, Illinois.
Who isn't from Coal City?
Everybody.
At this point?
I mean, Nat King Cole. That's why they named it that.
Yes, it is.
No, probably not. No, folks, I just want to tell you, this has always been a dream of Ron's to open up a place like this. This isn't a money grab. This is a labor of love. So everyone, come on out when it gets open.
Thanks, Rob. I'll give you your $7 a little bit later.
Huh. You're good. I know where you live.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rob.
Ron, is that true? Buddy. Has it always been, like, even when you were young, did you go, someday I want this to happen?
The truth be told, that when I was in school, I would draw, you know, doodling, because I wasn't paying attention. I'd be doodling, like, stages and how I'd set up speakers and the drums and what I was going to do and do concerts and stuff like that. And I've been playing for many, many years.
Yeah.
But at some point, you know, I had to make money and do something with it. So, you know, it's starting to happen. It was like 8 years ago. I used to work downtown here in Chicago at an attorney's office. Support services, not as an attorney. But 8 years ago or so, I quit to do music full time.
How'd that go?
Well, when I said it, what had happened was we had a terrible snowstorm, and I came in, and the boss is like, oh, you're going to have to make up time. You're going to have to do this. And he was coming down on me. I go, you know what? I think it's just time I turn in my resignation.
Oh, no.
And as soon as the words left my mouth, I went, what the heck did I just do?
Yeah.
So I got serious. I started playing music full time. I own a sound company besides, and we've been doing that, doing the concerts and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's always been, you know, in the back of my head, I hear my dad going, don't go into music. Sure. You want to be a lawyer.
I have a kid who wants to be a musician, so that's why I was picking your brain on
that.
Yeah.
There was, Joliet Junior College just had a great program there called Sessions. They come up with people who talk about being in the music industry.
Yeah.
And Carl Giammarese from the Buckinghams was there as one of the guest speakers. And, you know, it's a little more than, and that's kind of the programming we want to offer for the kids, that we want to honor the ones that had made it and kind of nurture the ones that want to make it.
It's a great plan.
That's
you
so
have.
Nice. And Skip, as long as we have you here, for yeah. people who don't know, Skip is one of the finest stand-ups and performers we've ever seen here in town. Are there dates coming up that people can see you?
Well, I've got I did bring the calendar. I've got a lot of things, not so much in the very near future, but I'll be at Metropolis in Arlington Heights.
Oh, good.
And I'll be back at the Joliet Historical Museum. And there's a Performing Arts Center in Pontiac. I'm going to be there, the Eagle. And so a lot. Go to my website, skipgreparis.com, and you can find out about it. And really, that's the main reason that I'm on the board, is because my show is The Guys Who Gave Us Rock. It is a history of rock and roll from the 40s through the 60s.
Yeah.
So if I can help out a little bit with the history or whatever, and that's why I'm there.
That's excellent. But good to see both of you. We're so excited about this. This is going to be a huge success.
And let me know if you need help. I wasn't going to go.
Oh, we will.
Absolutely.
Believe me.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Website again, roadtorock.org.
Yes, that's correct.
Ron Romero and Skip Gruperis from the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum. Stick around. We've got news next and then a little bit more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Well, I've had dreams about a bank truck just breaking open in front of me.
It actually happened today, Wendy.
I'm sure they have cameras on the back of the truck.
You'd imagine.
Yeah, because they would have gotten my license plate number.
Oh, you'd be in jail by now. I'm shocked you're not in jail by now, and you didn't even have anything
Stop,
to do with this.
You know, really.
I mean, you know, I mean that with like.
I'm not going to share my Hofbrau House Wiener Schnitzel
oh,
with
you're
you.
Not? Oh, you have to. Dr. John Duffy is here. John, first of all, thank you for coming back. Every time you show up, Wendy and I are shocked. all right. There's something very specific that we want to discuss with you. But first, here's a quick side note.
Yeah.
I'm so curious about this. A couple of weeks ago, Wendy was out for the day, and a story came down that we did on the air. And I thought, who better to talk to than you for this? Here's what the story is. The shooter from the Parkland massacre.
Yeah.
Is in jail now and getting tons of fan letters and marriage proposals and people saying, hey, I'm on your side. I understand being alienated. I commiserate with you.
Yeah.
Throughout history, the bad boys of the world, you pick your poison. Do you want it to be John Wayne Gacy? Do you
Menendez
want it to be Richard
Brothers.
Speck? Do you want it to
Menendez
be the Menendez Brothers?
Brothers? They
They've gotten similar
wedding
attention.
Proposals.
Wedding proposals.
Don't get it.
What's going on there? What's in somebody's mind that sees somebody do something so horrendous and says, I want to be on their side?
Yeah. So people identify with these, what most of us think of as villains, as kind of these anti-heroes, right? That you know, like, oh, that's the cause that I believed in. I believe in like a no bullying situation in school, and you went and did something about it. Horrific, right? But there is this subset of kids, and it's this kind of like weird little subculture of people who kind of convince themselves. It's almost like the Manson group, right?
Yeah.
Who become followers of this kind of like, or the Jim Jones group.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of groupthink that gets people thinking this way. And then every once in a while, there's an outlier person who goes so deep down that rabbit hole that they decide this is my hero, my singular hero, and I'm going to reach out and befriend him and, you know, and create my own infamy like he did. It's terrifying in a way.
It almost, because we're all trying to think rationally, it so doesn't make sense.
No.
And yet it happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah, and psychologically, if you knew the backstory of the people who felt this way, it does make sense. I've actually sat across from kids. I remember post-Columbine, I sat across from kids who said, I don't condone what these guys did, but I do get it. You know, I do understand why they felt so disenfranchised that they wanted to really inflict pain and death on other people.
Okay, now should I feel guilty for feeling sorry for this kid? I know what he did was terrible. I obviously don't approve of that, but I feel like he was let down growing up and was not guided properly. And had he only gotten some help, perhaps we wouldn't have had this incident. Is that bad for me to say?
At the risk of your phone lines blowing up, no, I don't think that's bad to say. I think it's important because we're talking about all sorts of different ways to mitigate this kind of problem. And this is one way, is to recognize, like, okay, these people are going through something. This is happening frequently enough that these people are going through something that drives them to this horrifying act. If we can mitigate that, so if we can identify these people early on and get them the help they need psychologically, then we're going to be able to mitigate at least some of these acts. Can we get to every single one of them? You know, can we create a net that tight? I don't think so. I love the idea of it, though, and I feel for him, too. What, imagine the pain that brings somebody to this point in their lives where they know their life as they know it is over.
Right, they don't care.
They don't care.
But there's a huge difference between feeling some sympathy for somebody who's done something so horrendous and writing fan letters or marriage proposals.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
Please.
No, Bill, you're right. There's something like really, really...
And those people should be getting help because really that doesn't seem normal.
Agreed. You know, in the end, that's the punchline, is that that group needs help just as much as the guy who pulled the trigger or anybody who's suffering depression or anxiety or anything else. But that is almost by definition aberrant enough to require that kind of help. Yeah,
of course
for sure.
It does. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then we'll get to the real topic. Dr. John Duffy's here. If you'd like to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's our show psychologist, Dr. John Duffy, certified life coach, clinical psychologist, parenting and relationship expert. Please check out his podcast called Better with Dr. John Duffy and his wife, Julie Duffy. You can find it on WGN Plus and read his book, The Available Parent. There, that's done. Now, what did we want to discuss?
All right, so every year, and I forget to bring this up every year, but this is the time of year where people are planning family vacations, which seems like something that, you know, I should have no real say in. But when I find that when I work with a family and they take a vacation, whether it's at home, whether they head out to the Badlands, whether they go down to Disney World, good things happen. That family tends to be less stressed on the back end. They're out of their crisis mode. They get to know each other in a different context. Like kids will talk about, like, oh, my parents got goofy and, you know, like did something crazy mm-hmm. that I never expected them to do. Or the kids all sing together in the back of the car. You know, like things happen that would not happen at home, which I think is a great reason. I read an article last night that said families who go on vacations on a regular basis, the kids' minds are enriched in a way, no matter what the vacation is.
Sure.
It's just like they're out of context in one way or another, and that's a good thing. Those are not the main reasons that I like the idea of a family vacation.
Although they're very good.
They're all great reasons, right?
Yeah.
But I find that there's this resilience that gets created in families. So they have such a good time together. They get to know each other. These bonds are kind of tightened up. And then when something doesn't go well, like let's say in the middle of the school year, grades start to drop, or somebody gets depressed, or somebody gets anxious, we're a little more resilient to that as a family. My family, we never took vacations, and we had kind of never once. And we had tough times ahead. And I always think, like, I think we probably could have used some of that resilience, you know what I mean, going into some of these tough times. So I always encourage families, to the extent they can, get out there and experience something together as a family, even if you get resistance, which a lot of families do.
Did your family do a lot of vacations?
Always one a year and sometimes a second a year.
We very rarely did. Every once in a while we did. I went to Disney with my aunt and cousin and sister the summer my dad died, so then my mom could get things situated at home.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, get them out of there. And we tried to do vacations. One year we got in a car accident. We got hit by a semi, never made it to Cape Cod. Yeah. So you know the tales of woe involving my vacations.
Yeah.
And we used to take a yearly summer trip in my immediate family, me and the boys, to Disney.
Right.
And we stopped a couple years ago. And this year we've decided maybe doing Disneyland, mm-hmm. something different, or going back to Nashville for a long weekend, because that in itself is just you work together a little better, and there's no pressure, and it's just good for the family unit.
So good. And these weird things happen where people will talk about, like, the soundtrack of their vacation together as a family, or the in-jokes that they came up with that wouldn't have happened at home.
Right.
And even, like, Wendy, you've talked before about, like, you know, things that go wrong. That's the stuff from vacations and a lot of things that we remember. That's the stuff we laugh about. Oh, geez, how did we ever make it out of that mess, you know?
I'm going to throw something else in, John, and if you think I'm wrong, please tell me you think I'm
wrong.
Absolutely. You're in a finite space. You're in a more enclosed environment, and I think that's not the worst thing sometimes. When you're at home, you're all spread out. Everybody has their own room or their own space, but in a family vacation, you tend to be either in a car together or when you get to the hotel or wherever you're staying, you're forced to be closer together, and that's not always a bad thing. That can be a very good thing, right?
It's a brilliant point, Bill. I mean, it's one of the only times, I think, now that families are together and enjoying just each other's company, right? Because now, with screens and bedrooms with doors we can close, kids can just disappear, right? You know, and so we can go days. We know they're up there somewhere, but we might not really spend any time with them.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if we're in the car or if we're in the hotel room or if we're by the pool, we tend to be together.
Yeah.
And we tend to be interacting.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of all the people that get a suite or that get a room for the kids and then a room for the adults, because we've never done that. Maybe it's because I'm cheap. I guess a suite we would get where maybe, you know, there's a pull-out bed, but we've never gotten two separate rooms where the kids get one room and we get another.
I actually discourage that as often as possible.
Good. Just because I like
that idea that you have to be, you're kind of all snugged in together. You know, I think that's a good thing for a family. Just like kind of like what Bill is saying, like, you know, you're going to find a way to, like, play a game together or go down to the pool together or do something together you wouldn't ordinarily do that builds that resilience and that connection and those jokes and all that stuff that gets you ready for whatever's next.
We also, this was my wife's rule that I was against at first, but it paid off. No television when we're on vacation. The hotel has one, but we don't turn it on, you know?
And
that's better because then, again, you're almost forced to communicate more instead of all watching TV.
We do the same thing. Unless there is an important baseball game
on, then
right?
You have to. Then,
who sits in a hotel and really watches TV anyway?
Well, there's a lot of downtime where, you know, you're getting ready for dinner and everyone's not quite ready yet. So,
and you can't have a TV on then?
No. No, and I didn't like it at first, but it's a pretty good thing.
We get very used to the TV, but like, you know, sometimes I think it's good to take a break from that, you know, because oftentimes, just like in our marriages and stuff, we're facing the same way, looking at the same screen. We're not facing each other. We're not interacting in any way.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of families interacting in a different way. That vacation.
What about this? There are people, sometimes because of financial reasons, sometimes it's time constraints, that can't get away for a week or 10 days or whatever. So they invented this term staycation, where you're having a vacation, but it's in your own home. How do you adapt it to this, John?
Yeah, so I struggled with this term. I was thinking about this last night. I think you can do something very similar with a staycation where, you know, like we all live in pretty dynamic places if we start to look around. For example, I went to Cleveland last week and I thought, oh God, Cleveland, but we're visiting friends, so we should probably go. But we found a bunch of really fun things to do
in Cleveland. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We went to a Cubs game. But there was one strip that was a half a mile long. If we spent all our time for 2 days on that little strip and we didn't spend much money, we didn't do a whole lot, but we had a really good time. And I think you can find a little space pretty close to home, no matter where you live, and do a staycation kind of thing and just spend time with your family without spending a whole lot of money. Because I think it's a really good point. I think a lot of people are struggling financially and thinking, well, I can't run out to Disneyland or I can't run down to, you know, Orlando. And, you know, you don't have to.
You can run down to Chicago. We went to see the Rolling Stones exhibit at Navy Pier and took one of those architecture tours, which I had taken maybe 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
We had the greatest day ever, and it wasn't that much. We didn't get a hotel. We went home for the night.
Right.
And then I found out my kids have never been to the Willis Tower or the Hancock, and I'm like, all right, well, let's do that this summer.
Absolutely.
We take it for granted. We're so close, and we work downtown.
This is a great tourist town, right? I mean, if you treat Chicago like a tourist and you come with your family, you can spend days and not see a quarter of what we've got to offer here.
John, we also, my wife and I figured out years ago that we have two kinds of vacations. We have one where it's the four of us, where our daughters come along with us, and then at least once a year, sometimes twice or even three times, it's just she and I for a vacation.
Frisky.
And that's, oh, yeah. We play the Barry White music very loud, John, during
those
days.
This is when Bill has lobster rolls every single day.
And we have, I love my kids so much, and my wife does too. But sometimes that vacation of just her and me being, you know, just alone somewhere, that is the best.
You need that. We all need that time just with our spouse or our intimate partner. Yeah. I love that. And I actually think that's better for kids than we think.
Yeah.
You know, that's modeling like a good relationship for the kids. They like to see that mom and dad are having a good time together.
Yeah.
So I don't see anything wrong with that. I love that too. I think that's really good for a relationship. Yeah, absolutely.
Good. You got to do it, Wendy.
You know what? I was thinking of that, and I agree with you completely. I think back to before we had kids. I was pregnant on our first anniversary.
Yeah.
So I've been busy for 18 years, and now as they get older,
right?
I can't wait for Jim and I to take a trip together where I can, you know, I don't have to have, they're at that age, 15 right now. I feel like somebody should be watching over them, but then they're sort of old enough, so in a couple years, we're going to join you in Maine.
My parents left us alone when I was 6. They're like, you know where the Fruit Loops are. You're
You'll
fine.
Figure it out. Yeah.
It's all right. John, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. That's Dr. John Duffy. Listen to his podcast, Better. It's on WGN+. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You know, I feel badly. We don't have a lot of time to discuss this, and it really is a discussion that could go on for quite a bit. But we're leaving early today for White Sox baseball. We only have a couple minutes. Have you been following the Kanye West rant about slavery?
I got to be honest with you. I don't follow anything Kanye West does.
That's actually a very wise move.
I really don't.
This was almost unavoidable since yesterday. Now, Kanye West in the past has complained because he has said on several occasions that he is treated like a slave. And it always makes me very angry when he says that, because I think if he would read up about slavery a little bit, he would realize that living in a mansion and driving really nice cars and being flown first class to things isn't exactly the way slaves were treated.
Right? He knows better. He does know better. Come on.
You'd think he would know better. But yesterday, he kind of topped himself, which isn't always easy to do when you're Kanye West. But he was on with TMZ Live, and he said, and I quote, "When you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, that sounds like a choice." As if to say, and he goes on later to talk about it in a little more detail, as if to say something couldn't happen that long if they weren't kind of giving into it, that they were making a conscious decision to be slaves, when in reality, nothing could be further from the truth.
Do you see why I don't pay attention to anything he tweets or does? And I think he, you know, Kanye, you need some help, and I'm not saying it in a mean way. When he lost his mother, I feel like he needs some help.
Yeah.
He does. It doesn't seem like he's acting in his right mind.
He's not very
rational.
Plus,
he married a Kardashian.
Now, I have said in the past that they deserve each other, because you know how you can be a fame vampire? Like you can, you know how vampires live on blood?
Yes.
So there's a vampirism to them where their blood is fame. They just want to suck more fame. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of people in the world that are meant to be, but those guys are perfect for each other because they both are of that same mindset.
They do seem to be a pretty good pair.
Yeah.
Happy? I can't tell, but they seem to be a pair.
But it's so crazy. And I give credit. I don't know the guy's name over at TMZ. There was a guy who called him out on this. He's one of the reporters over at TMZ who really called him out on it and said, you know, essentially, what? What are you thinking? Why would you say that out loud? Slavery is not a choice. For 400 years, it was not a choice. There's not a single day out of the 400 years that somebody willingly said, yeah, please make me a slave. I'm all in. I want in for that.
I don't know what to tell you.
I know. So some have speculated, and I'm on the fence on this, that he has timed this almost expertly with the release of his newest album. That you could be of the school of thought of, nobody's really talking about me, so why don't I say something incredibly outrageous so that all of a sudden everybody's talking about me, which he's getting the last couple of days. But what about that? There's no such thing as bad publicity. This isn't good publicity for a guy to come out and say, hey, that slavery thing, by choice.
But here is a thing. If you love someone and he's got a lot of fans, Bill.
Oh, there's no question about it.
He has a lot of fans.
There's no question.
That, you know, oh, that's Kanye. That's what he does.
Right.
I can't wait for his new record to come out. So bad press is good press sometimes.
Well, he's just coming off of a couple of days ago. He's coming off of this weird hero worship thing with the president where people were saying, oh, could this have been some sort of a publicity move? So then as that starts to die down, he makes these statements yesterday about slavery being a choice. So that gets his stock is rising once again.
And if he truly is going to run for president next term, this is probably not a good. This is bad press for that.
This could be considered bad press. Yeah.
All right. White Sox baseball coming your way. And another sport, the Blackhawks, the great Eddie Olczyk. He's beating cancer. He's kicking cancer's ass, and he is picking winners. You can hear his Derby fave when he joins Steve Cochran at 9:10 tomorrow morning. It's a beautiful day for a baseball game, and White Sox baseball is coming your way in about 10 seconds, Bill.
It's White Sox and Cardinals. Now, normally the Cardinals are the rivals of the Cubs, but I will accept the White Sox-Cardinals rivalry. Very, very happy. That's coming up next. Bill and Wendy saying goodbye.